Hey everyone, you're listening to the official podcast of 4playernetwork.com. Check us out at that address for everything you need to know about our community, monthly giveaways, and nightly live streams. You can even support us on Patreon at patreon.com/4player. And last but not least, you can catch the live recordings of these podcasts every single Thursday night on our Twitch channel. We hope to see you there. Enjoy. I am. Sorry. I am now officially always recording. Hey, everyone. Okay. Welcome to this bonus podcast. This is a special spoiler podcast for Star Wars The Last Jedi. Of course, I am Nick Henderson from 4playernetwork.com. I am joined, of course, by Nolan Hedstrom. How are you doing, Nolan?
I'm doing pretty good.
You saw the movie on Friday morning at, like, oh, dark 30?
Yeah, 7:15 a.m.
I cannot believe you did that. Anyways, we'll get to that in a second. Also joining us this evening is Crispy.
Hello!
Who saw it last night, as did I.
I saw it last night.
Yes. Yeah. So first of all, I would like to thank all of our supporters on Patreon who have tuned in our Discord channel to listen to us record this. They might be chiming in periodically. We might react to some things that y'all say in chat if there's anything interesting that might add to the conversation. But thank you guys for tuning in just to listen. And if you're interested in spectating any of these recordings in the future, you can find out about that at patreon.com/4player. But enough about that. Let's talk about Star Wars The Last Jedi, because, goddamn, there's a lot to unpack with this film. So much so, I really honestly have no idea where to begin. I guess, first of all, I was going to try and watch The Force Awakens before watching this movie, and I ran out of time, unfortunately. But I thought it was interesting, because, Crispy, you're currently watching The Force Awakens right now, right?
I'm
at this moment?
I paused it before we started recording, but right now, I am at Han and Rey and Finn and Chewie arriving at Maz's palace.
Okay. Yeah. So you're a little ways. Honestly, yeah. I think when I... Because I was telling Nick, I wanted to watch The Force Awakens before... And so I started watching it not too long ago. I was doing something in my loft, and so I just had it kind of going on my projector. I wanted to, like, sometimes when I'll do stuff, I was, like, assembling IKEA furniture or something, whatever. And I think I got just past that.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen the ending recently.
And I completely ran out of time and didn't watch a second of it, but I watched it, like, 6 months ago or something, so it's kind of fresh. But I thought...
I really didn't think it was that big a deal to watch it, because I've seen it so many times. I was gonna watch it before I went to go see Last Jedi, and now having seen Last Jedi and coming back to it, like, I'm now realizing, like, how fucking different they are.
Yes,
like, I have this crazy sense of whiplash.
So I think also, this is an interesting thought. Maybe before we talk about the actual movie, are any of y'all interested in talking about maybe what you were expecting from the movie before you actually saw it?
I don't know what I was expecting. I think I didn't realize how much I was I guess I'm so sorry. Like, as soon as we started recording, like, everybody in my house started pounding on walls.
I mean, what else would they do on a Sunday?
Yeah, evening? I don't know. Like, but anyway, I didn't realize how closely my expectations aligned with what The Force Awakens is, you know?
Yeah.
How do you mean?
Until I didn't get that. I was like,
oh, so you're saying you were expecting something more like The Force Awakens, and that's not what it ended up being in that episode?
Right. I mean, yeah. Like, yes, kind of.
Can I start this by asking y'all which one you liked better? I like doing that.
Oh, between this and The Force Awakens? Force Awakens. Yeah. Well, first of all,
I think this is a better movie. I think this is by far a better film than The Force Awakens. I don't know if I like it better than The Force Awakens.
In terms of the way the movie was made and written and whatnot.
Yes, I think this was a better film than The Force Awakens. I think that this one had a lot more in terms of, like, actual themes and kind of thoughtful message that it was trying to get across. I think there was a lot of choices that on the surface seemed kind of bizarre in this movie, but when you really look at them, were all made in service of those themes.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty consistent in Rian Johnson's filmography anyway already. Like, mm-hmm. I've had those kind of feelings and opinions about Looper and about Brothers Bloom for years, you know, that sometimes like action might not make a whole lot of sense, but that the through line of the story definitely does.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like he's really more worried about getting theme and getting arc across than making sure that every meticulous detail of action makes like perfect practical sense.
And that's fine. At least in my opinion, I think that's fine.
No, I think that's great. And I think I like that. That is something that I definitely enjoy in filmmaking. I think that The Force Awakens is kind of like The Avengers in that it is a very solid, very competent film. It's a little like comfort foody. Like it's not challenging or deviates in any real major way. But that a huge amount of the credit that we give those movies is owed to the fact that they weren't just films when they came out. They were like these kind of moments in pop culture, yeah. You know? And it was really fun to be there and be a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's definitely true.
And not to mention The Force Awakens, like you say, you use comfort food to describe it. And I think that's even more true with The Force Awakens, considering how much that movie actually mimicked A New Hope. And I've even seen people talk about The Last Jedi saying in a lot of ways this, at least maybe the opening... or maybe the first third or so of this movie was kind of in line with The Empire Strikes Back in some ways. But at some point in The Last Jedi, it takes kind of a hard left and does some pretty unique things. But, like, coming off of The Force Awakens, I had this, like... I felt like I knew what to expect. Like, I was like, I feel like this was going to be... The whole movie was going to be Rey training with Luke, and it was all building to her learning to be... That's what I thought.
I didn't think it was going to be. I thought, like... Because for me, it was one of those situations where, when you kind of mimic or we talk about mimicking Empire, you know, Luke trained with Yoda for not long at all and was like, oh, shit, I got to go. Peace out. Yeah. And Yoda was like, no, if you leave now, your training's not going to be blah, blah, blah. And so I didn't want to say I thought it was going to be the same thing, because I definitely knew that Luke had kind of deserted, you know, the Jedi, you know, just from what we kind of learned. And so I thought it was going to be similar or... almost less so that he wouldn't want to teach her.
I thought it was going to be like he was going to train her, but hesitantly. And I thought through that training, it was going to turn into something like by teaching Rey, he was going to realize something about the Jedi or something.
And kind of come back from that.
And then bounce back from it. And that wasn't really at all how it went. And I took it as after seeing The Force Awakens and like there was this weird moment in The Force Awakens where, you know, Rey uses the Force and you realize, okay, she's Force sensitive. She's going to be a Jedi, obviously, but she needs training. She needs someone to teach her. And I thought this was going to be that movie. This was going to be Luke ultimately finding an apprentice and teaching her to become a Jedi. And like, when you get right down to it, at the end of The Last Jedi, she didn't get much training at all.
She didn't really have any training.
So at the conclusion of this movie, it seems like she's not going to get any training, which I was not expecting.
I think it's a situation. It's something they touch on in there, you know, the conversation with Yoda and Luke or whatever, what is that terminology, Crispy, for like the Force ghost or whatever?
Yeah, the Force ghost.
Force ghost, yeah. It's just that, like, there, no matter what happens, there's always going to be Jedi, you know, that because, or the Force at least, and the Force will
always
kind of
be the Force,
correct, which will inevitably lead towards, you know, Jedi being a thing. So even though she doesn't have a master
about it too, at some point in the past, like there was never a Jedi master to teach other Jedi.
Someone had to start
And I feel like that's kind of maybe Rey is kind of representing like a
the
new
whole...
What was that?
I'm sorry. Like,
I just heard Crispy
like,
say the whole.
The whole. On the whole. Preparation H feels good. I'm sorry. I'm really trying to organize my thoughts as best as I can. It's overwhelming. The reason why I think it definitely works and why I wasn't really expecting the kind of like traditional... she goes to Dagobah and trains to be a Jedi master like you were, mm-hmm. is because Nick.
Oh, especially. Sorry to interject really quick. Just especially when I saw the X-Wing underwater.
Yeah.
In this movie, I was like, God damn it. Is that going to get pulled out of the water using the Force? And I'm glad it did. But anyway, yeah. Continue, Crispy.
Yeah, for sure. That would have been kind of cool, but whatever. like, I don't know. I have been of the opinion about Star Wars in general that, like, the Jedi are the worst and that the Force is the worst.
Okay.
Because of the way they've been written or used, right?
Because of the way it's been written and used. Because I really like the idea of what the Jedi kind of were when they were this like myth of legend, you know, the way that Obi-Wan talks about the Jedi.
So essentially
about the Jedi and
essentially
and
pre
never got that
prequel stuff. Right. Huh? As I would say, you know, the original trilogy stuff when, you know, I hate talking bad about the prequels, and that's just personally because I don't like them. And I know a lot of people don't, and I know a lot of people do, but personally I don't like that they put so much science in those ones. I liked when it was mythical, when it was kind of magical, when it was mysterious, when it was just, oh, the Force.
That extends beyond just the difference between science and myth, and also the difference between legend and, like, these established institutions of what essentially were institutions of oppression, you know? Like Obi-Wan describes the Jedis as being like these valiant warriors of justice in the galaxy. And we don't really they say that all the time, especially in the prequels. They say that all the time. That's what the Jedi are. But you never see that. And the way the Jedi actually act in the movies is very much like this aloof, disconnected priest class that doesn't really have their finger on the pulse. They don't know what's going on. They are overwhelmed and so self-involved with this whole myth they've built about themselves, you know?
I was just going to say that that's actually one thing I liked about Rogue One was, I forget his name now, Donnie, the blind, you know, Jedi, not Jedi, whatever, the protector of what was his name?
Yen.
Dadine. I liked that kind of element of it. While he didn't use the Force, he still regarded the Force as being that mystical thing. He still talked about it with that longing and with that, you know, not talking about it scientifically, but more of like, oh, this is something we need to preserve and protect. And
we don't see that enough from Star Wars, that the Force is bigger than the Jedi and the Sith.
Exactly.
And the Jedi and the Sith are part of this wheel, this big cycle that the Empire and the Republic were a part of, that the First Order and the Resistance are a part of, that the Separatists and the Old Republic were a part of. And it's just this giant wheel of conflict that keeps spinning and doesn't really go anywhere. And I fucking love, the thesis of the movie to me, and I fucking love this line, is Luke Skywalker says something to the effect of, thinking that the light would die without the Jedi was vanity, you know? That the Jedi were the end-all be-all of what the Force was, is. It makes no sense. They created that fiction about themselves, and they use things. You can even read it. They don't talk about midichlorians in this movie, but you can read into it that midichlorians were just a part of this elitist system of control that the Jedi had. It was pseudoscience applied to something that we've been told that we know in our hearts is not this quantifiable scientific thing. It is this great power of mysticism. The way Yoda describes the Force in The Empire Strikes Back is, in my book, the definitive definition, the definitive attitude about what the Force is.
Yeah,
I agree. And that's something that actually another, you know, kind of coming off of what Luke said about it like that, I agree. I really liked that scene where he was kind of describing it. And when he was teaching her about the Force, when he's like, you know, reach out, feel it inside you, all that stuff and describing it. And then actually I really liked when Snoke was talking about about Kylo Ren. He was talking about how he knew that as the dark side grew in him, equally the light grew in him as well. And I really like that concept that it's not, you don't become more evil or more good. You kind of do, but you know, as his attunement towards the dark side, as he got more powerful in that, the light rose equally because there's that balance. No matter what you do, it's a balance.
Well, yeah. I also took that to mean that he was talking specifically about Rey. Not that like the light would rise to meet it just within him, but that mm-hmm. also in the Force, somebody else as equally powerful would also come up. Because
that's an interesting concept too.
That's something that pops up a lot too in Star Wars, is like the duality of like there's a Jedi and there's a Sith, you know? Mm-hmm. But what I love what this movie did was it took all those complaints. It took everything that was wrong with the prequels and removed, like we've talked enough about how like bad it was from a constructive like writing standpoint, but own it and make it part of the fiction going forward. You know, having Luke Skywalker sit there and say, no, you're right to notice that those Jedi were full of shit, you know, because they were. And we can do better than that. Like, we can break the whole system. We can stop. What?
Can you back off your mic just like an inch?
Yeah, I think it's popping a little bit.
And you're getting excited and getting close to your mic, maybe. But yeah, keep going, though. I'm loving it.
Yeah.
I lost my.
I'm sorry.
Damn.
Well, you were talking about
that, like, shit.
The Jedi were full of shit.
Yep.
Right. Like, so full of shit. The whole movie. Oh, fuck me. The whole movie is about breaking cycles and every.
I think that was most evident too in Kylo Ren said this. I think. Twice in the movie, but when he was talking to Rey specifically, I remember in the scene when they were in Snoke's chambers after they had that big battle, and everybody said, and he told her to let go of everything, let go of the Jedi, let go of the rebellion.
He stops short of the First Order, but he says like all of this is pointless.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You need to let go and move forward, and that's also reflective in the conflict between the First Order and the Resistance. Like that whole, like, it's not just the Sith and the Jedi fighting over the Force. It's also this like proxy battle between them through the First Order and the Resistance. Like that whole thing is a pointless struggle. And we'll talk a little bit later about how the pacing in the beginning of the movie is a little off because of some of the humor. But I'm going to go on record right now to say that I really, really, really liked the Poe Dameron General Hux scene. I don't know that it belongs where it's put. I don't think it works that early, especially when you haven't even like started to build tension. You know, you haven't started to get that momentum.
I mean, it was the same thing in the first movie when you know Kylo Ren and Poe like first met.
Yeah, but dude, I'm serious. Go back and watch that. Like the first 5 minutes of that movie are straight to business action.
Wait, Force Awakens. Action.
Yes.
No. I agree.
Yeah, and by the time you get to that little joke that he cracks, it's a nice little tension relief. Here you start with like almost no tension, and then you do like an actual like comedic
like a
bit for like 2 minutes. You know, it's kind of weird, and it sets off like it pushes back. Actually, like beginning the rising action. You know what I'm saying?
Can I talk about that?
Well, hang on. The point I'm trying to get to here is that I don't think that scene works where it is, but I think that scene does something really cool that hasn't really happened in a main Star Wars movie yet. First of all, not only does it characterize Poe and Hux, you get exactly who these two guys are after that encounter. It also does this thing where it really like it makes the whole conflict between the First Order and the Resistance seem stupid. Like it seems dumb while you're sitting there watch these two guys yell at each other over intercom. Like it seems really stupid. It gives the First Order this like punch clock villain kind of vibe. Like, you guys have been doing this for a while now, haven't you? This is Tuesday for you, isn't it? Like this isn't like the final moments of some epic battle that's gonna decide the fate of the galaxy. This is just you guys chasing each other around, shooting lasers at each other.
It's almost cartoony.
It's pointless. And it feels like you kind of feel like this is pointless, you know? You know, and that kind of folds back into the main conceit of the movie about breaking cycles, about like stopping these weirdly cyclical conflicts. You know,
it's funny too, just on a grander scheme, when you talk about breaking cycles, when it's all said and done, like the feeling I had when I left the theater was that where do they go from here? Like that kind of shattered all expectations I had of Star Wars, of the overarching Star Wars story.
There's more potential going forward now than there's ever been.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. I like that they kind of, you know, like almost like Kylo Ren was saying, and that's good for, you know, the Star Wars universe, but also the movies, is, you know, fuck the First Order, the Jedi, whatever. Like, just forget all of that, clean slate, all of that's gone. The potentials are endless now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Some would argue that, I saw something earlier today. Someone's argument was that The Last Jedi was written very much like a conclusion, like a finale, which leaves like the final movie in the trilogy as like up in the air, kind of like, well, what story are you wrapping up? Because I feel like it already kind of wrapped up in a lot of ways.
I mean, you can wrap up the story of Rey and Finn and Poe.
I don't necessarily agree with
that.
The whole
future of the galaxy basically is resting on whatever dynamic Rey and Kylo Ren decide to take with one another.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, everything is about the relationship between those two. Are they going to be enemies? Are they going to be friends? If they're friends, what are they going to agree on? You know, like everybody's fate basically, like, I really love what this movie did with those characters, because it kind of stripped them out of everything else that was going on around them. And it made them these really like lofty kind of, these like dueling messiah characters, you know.
Yeah.
They're not really part of the conflict that's going on around them. There's people dying all over the place, but none of that really matters to them, and everything kind of rests on like this weird Cain and Abel, Romulus and Remus kind of relationship that they now have with one another, of like, how are we gonna figure this out, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, I think, is going to be expressed in what Rey decides to do with, like, you know, whatever the new version of quote unquote Jedi is going forward.
Yeah.
You know, I think part of what the movie was trying to say was that, like, you know, the Force is much bigger than the Jedi, and therefore you're not ever going to be able to create an institution like the Jedi that kind of like can rein it all in. Like, this is going to be something now where like there are Force users in the galaxy all over the place, and they're going to come in every shape, size, color, and variety. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're going to be good, they're going to be bad, they're going to be indifferent. Like, it's not going to be this dual thing anymore. It's going to be this crazy uncontrollable spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And what role would a Jedi type organization take in that environment, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what I'm really fucking excited about. That's what I've been waiting for Star Wars to get to for so long.
And they kind of drove that point home with the final like scene of the movie with the young boy who was in the stables, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you see him kind of pull the broom to himself using the Force. Like, that was a really subtle and nice way of kind of driving that point home, I thought.
I agree, and I also like that it wasn't super obvious. Like, it was almost kind of in a shadow of the scene when he did it.
Yeah.
And at first, I didn't realize he did it. I was like, wait, did he just?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't super obvious.
People in the theater were all kind of like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It was a really confused, delayed reaction.
Speaking of, and just because I'm thinking about it now, speaking of, like, what the fuck moments,
when
what's-her-face, I can't remember her name, like Admiral Laura Dern.
Laura Dern. We'll just say Laura Dern.
Yeah, when Laura Dern, like, turned the ship around and went the light speed at their ship.
Shit, that was cool.
Holy fuck, that was awesome. When it goes silent and you just see everything exploding, like, people in the theater were like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, I heard people like, oh shit. Like,
yeah.
It was pretty awesome.
There was a moment where like the ship was slowly turning around, and you kind of see that look on Poe's face where he's kind of like, oh. And then I kind of realized at that moment, like, oh, she's going to jump to light speed through that ship. I think that's going to be awesome. But then when they actually did it, like the way that shot was like orchestrated, oh my God, it was beautiful.
The multiple views and stuff. And the funny thing is, you know, they've mentioned that in the past, like, oh, we can't just jump to light speed whenever. Who knows where we're going to turn up, all this stuff. And it's the fact that, you know, whenever someone in that universe jumps to light speed, you have to calculate where you're going, what's between you and there, because, shit like that can happen. And being able to see that happen was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah, I think that was a pretty awesome
Can I bring up a gripe?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Because I like to talk about things I don't like first, so we always end on a positive note.
Yeah.
We talked about the comedy a bit.
Uh-huh.
I thought there was way too much of it.
There was a lot.
I thought some of the scenes, while I did kind of chuckle a bit, I thought it would have played out better in that scene if that bit hadn't have been there.
Yeah. Honestly, like, the biggest one for me, and this is less about him actually doing this and more about just the way they framed it and the way they shot it. But the scene where Rey hands him the lightsaber and then he tosses it, it was like a gag. And we waited.
It almost seems like an outtake.
Yeah,
we were talking about that earlier. Like I was saying, like I kind of expected something like that to happen. I was like, man, how cool would it be if Luke just fucking whipped the lightsaber off the cliff and was like, you know, fuck you. I'm not getting dragged back into this. So I was kind of hoping they would do something like that. I never expected them to play that as a bit, though.
Yeah. Like, so I think there are many ways he could have done that, which would have still gotten the same point across, but not been comedic. If he had looked at it for a second and just kind of looked down and tossed it behind him, you know, that wouldn't have been funny. It would have been
Instead
more serious.
Just, like looking at her with that fucking like
grin, almost
cat about to knock something off a table face.
Yeah,
whipping it over.
Like I said, it almost to me seemed like Mark Hamill did that as a bit, and they're like, just leave it in. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah.
And like I said, I just thought there were so many scenes, like when Poe woke up from, sorry, not when Poe, when Finn woke up from his coma.
It's like, yeah, why are we doing this?
Why did he need to fall off the table? You know, like I understand maybe him walking down the hallway, sure, whatever, fine. But like, why did he have to like bumble off the table and stuff? And I thought that scene would have been the same if he hadn't have fallen.
So,
that would have been, if they'd done the scene of him falling off the table, it would have been fine. I think what was egregious was like
him walking down the hall.
Him walking down the hall with the fucking garbage bag suit with water coming out of every, like it was this weird bit of absurd visual comedy that like I don't know why we're diffusing all of this tension that doesn't exist yet.
Well, and here's one thing, and this is just something that I've kind of noticed since the beginning of The Force Awakens, and a lot of this might be Disney's influence. And maybe the directors they've chosen to make these films, but I feel like maybe more so than ever in The Last Jedi, while he's trying to make a serious film, he's trying to make a film for fans of Star Wars, he's also very self-aware of the fact that at its core, Star Wars is a movie for children.
Yeah. I think there were some choices made specifically to keep the younger fans along, because if we just spent 2.5 hours talking about the subtleties of you know, myth versus real life and heroes being, you know, heroes' place in society, like, you know, the kids might have completely tuned out. Yeah. I also think some of it is just Rian Johnson. Yeah, I mean, no, he doesn't have that many films out to look at, but there was a lot going on in terms of comedy here that was making me think of Brothers Bloom, which I think is like his most comedic movie he's done.
And I think it does come down to the director too, because there was a lot of comedy in The Force Awakens too, but it felt more.
I think it was the timing was better, the delivery was better. I liked it in Force Awakens. It was more like I said. You could go back and count the number of jokes that were in Force Awakens, and I guarantee you, it's almost like triple that in The Last Jedi.
It was action movie comedy. I mean, it was funny the way that like Die Hard can be funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like it. And again, that's just a function of J.J. Abrams. Like that's what J.J. Abrams does. He does rollicking action movies, and part of the DNA of that sort of movie is that you have to have a little bit of tension.
You have to cut the tension. Yeah, but always be 100%. You got to bring it down.
This wasn't written as like little bits to keep the mood. Like this was straight up. There were comedic scenes. Like this was straight up comedy writing.
I think one of the best comedic moments of the entirety of Star Wars, any of the films, I think, can be summed up in The Force Awakens, in the scene where after Finn and Rey first meet and they're running and the TIE fighters are swooping in and they're running towards the ship, and then he's like, "What about that one?" And she's like, "That's a piece of junk." And then the thing explodes and the camera pans over, because not only did it like make fans of Star Wars like gush with like nostalgia and love. But like it was genuinely funny, like
it was a good moment. The timing was good. It was
and it felt real. Like almost people in that scenario could have made that statement in that moment. And, like okay,
it makes a certain bit of sense in this kind of story that Force Awakens is trying to be too, because Force Awakens was leaning super heavily into that, not just nostalgia, but also the sort of the feeling, the warm feeling you get in your heart from like the myth of it all,
yeah.
the monomyth of it, like the legendary fairy tale of Luke Skywalker, Jedi Master, and Han Solo, pilot of the Millennium Falcon, all this shit. Like the movie revels in that. Like the scene, like I just watched the scene where Han was talking to Rey and Finn about, you know, like the dark side, the light side, the Force, the Jedi, all of it's real. Like, dude, that scene still fucking kills.
Oh yeah, me too.
It just feels so fucking warm and fuzzy inside. And it's really weird to go from that to The Last Jedi, which is very much designed to like slap you the fuck out of that. Mm-hmm. Like it's basically saying like that feeling that you're feeling when you watch shit like that, when you hear these stories, can lead you to absolute ruin.
Yeah. Like, but so I still think that there is definitely room for comedy. And I think honestly, there's like half of the jokes in the movie you could leave in there. Well, like I said, I just think there are several that I would rather have them taken out. And yeah. I honestly don't think it would. I think if I were to get a copy of it right now and I cut out a bunch of those jokes, honestly, yeah. I think the movie would have been better.
Probably
and,
so, because yeah.
like, most of them are just like little things. Now, granted, like I said, I liked some of the jokes. When Hux finds Kylo Ren knocked out and he starts reaching for his blaster and then like Kylo Ren moves and he just slowly goes back. That was fucking hilarious.
Wait,
a word was said. It wasn't slapstick. It was just that subtle movement.
And not only was it funny, but it was also motivated by General Hux's character.
Which part were you talking about?
He would be that guy.
Nick, towards the end of the movie, after Kylo and Rey have their force pull when on the lightsaber and it explodes and Kylo Ren's like knocked out.
Yeah.
When Hux finds him, he like walks into the room and he sees him like knocked out on the ground. He reaches for his blaster.
Yeah,
like,
very slyly.
Like kind of get up a little bit, and he just slowly pulls his hand away from his blaster and just like, "What happened here?" Like, it's a subtle moment.
Yeah,
but that's what I'm saying. I liked that it was subtle. And then you have moments where like, where fucking Finn gets knocked down by Phasma, and then he comes up and he says some fucking one-liner. I can't remember exactly, and he hits her in the head with the fucking whatever he was using against her. But like that one liner wasn't fucking necessary. He could have just popped up and hit her. When Rose and BB-8 rescue Finn, they're like, "Oh, need a lift?" Like, it's just like some of those things just aren't necessary.
Yeah, no, I agree. But in an attempt to shift gears a little bit, mm-hmm. one thing I want to talk about, one thing that I loved, mm-hmm. I think Kylo Ren knocked it out of the park in this movie.
Oh, I agree.
I mean, like, I liked him in The Force Awakens, but his performance in this movie, I thought, was one of the best.
I have a question, and I would actually like to ask, like, Rian Johnson this. But early on, yeah, as they're developing Kylo's Ren character more in this movie, Snoke, like, tells him, like, take off that stupid mask. Like, he essentially says what everyone was thinking. Like, you use that to intimidate people. It's dumb. You're dumb.
You also,
take it off.
You also,
and he doesn't wear it the rest of the fucking movie.
Yeah, I think it's also because he recognized that you're trying to be Darth Vader, and you're not Darth Vader. Stop trying to be Darth Vader, so...
Well, the first movie kind of, like, touches on that, too, a little bit. It doesn't really push it, but the first movie is kind of setting up... I think these two movies dovetail in a very interesting way, in that they're both messing with the idea that, like, these movies are about kids playing Star Wars, mm-hmm. you know, like this next generation of kids who grew up on Star Wars like we did are mm-hmm. now playing Star Wars, and they're doing these things that emulate their heroes and their icons.
Yeah.
In the first movie, in Force Awakens, when Kylo Ren takes off his helmet, it's kind of played for like a, like, oh my god, the bad guy's taking off his helmet, and what, it's this guy?
Yeah.
Like this fucking little pretty boy? Okay. You know, like the first movie though really is embracing them in trying to find themselves in these myths and legends. And then the second movie is saying, like, okay, you need to fucking grow up now, because things are actually happening, and you're not going to just be able to do what they did, because perpetuating these cycles has only led to more death and pain and suffering. Like, you need to grow up and build a better world, basically, you know?
And that comes across in what Kylo Ren says. It comes across in what Luke Skywalker says.
Kylo Ren's all about that in this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that whole scene in Snoke's chambers was... That was...
The first time or the towards the end?
Towards the end. Like when he brings Rey to Snoke.
Fight.
When he fucking cuts Snoke in half. Yeah. That was incredible. So
I'm still kind of torn by that scene.
Jesus Christ.
Like, sorry. Well, I mean, kind of. I'm torn between if I liked it or hated it. Because I really liked what happened. I really liked that Snoke was kind of, because the Force doesn't work like, you can't read someone's mind. You can't see exactly what they're thinking, but you can feel their emotions. And I liked him describing, oh, I know he's going to turn the lightsaber towards the one he hates the most and turn it blah, blah, blah. I liked that. But I don't know if I liked that it just kind of went through him and then he slumped over or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wish I guess I like that it wasn't the same as the original trilogy, where you have the Emperor and he bigger through the three movies, and then the last one he dies. I like that they kind of got rid of him in this one. He didn't have to be, like, because he's no longer the point. It's kind of what Chrissy was talking
about. It's also in another way kind of breaking the cycle. It's kind of like, we knew what you were expecting. It's not what you expected. This is not the be all end all of this trilogy. We're gonna kill him off.
He's just a guy.
Yeah,
he's really good with the Force. But he's just a guy, or I don't know what he is, whatever the fuck he is.
Like, I here in chat, Wendigo says, like, it was a super disappointing death for a big bad, but I think the point is that he's not the big bad.
Yeah, he's not the bad guy. That's not the point.
He's a red herring, basically. Mm-hmm. Like.
And I also like that where it played out, where it wasn't Kylo Ren wanted to kill him so he could take his place and continue on, but he wanted to kill him because, like, he was telling Rey, just clean it all. Like, just, like, fucking get rid of it, and there's no point in it. But I agree with you, Nick. That entire, from the second Rey entered that chamber until they left, like, that whole fucking thing was awesome.
Yeah, it was
the fight between the like those red guards.
Yeah,
holy shit! I'm glad I got to see a fight with some awesome weapons and with some people who, even though they aren't Force users, like, can fucking stand their own. Granted, they all died, but
that one guy got lightsaber in the face.
That was another moment where the audience fucking flipped out a bit.
Wait, did you say those were the Knights of Ren?
I don't know. Who knows?
They could have been, maybe, yeah.
Man.
But are you talking about the part where she fucking throws her lightsaber to him and he catches it and just, like,
turns it on
to that guy's face?
Yeah. That was fucking awesome.
Oh, that was so cool.
It was cool to see, like, for a split second.
Did you
get
chills when they went back to back? When they were like, okay, we're doing this, and they, like, turn around and start fighting?
But I agree. I like that they were fighting, like, for different reasons, and I guess neither of them were sure yet. But I like that they both, like, were like, oh, we need to take care of these guys, and then we can settle our thing. But, like, that's the situation we're in.
It also kind of gives the audience a taste of, like, it shows what it might be like if Kylo Ren decided to switch sides.
Become good.
And it shows maybe he had, or bad. That, or the other way around. It just shows that, like, there's potential in both of them to do just that.
And that's, like, their whole dynamic now is that they're both convinced that they have to, like, convert the other.
Yeah.
They have to, like, save the other in some weird way. And I love what the movie did with Rey in making her, like Rey is just as misguided as Kylo Ren is.
Oh yeah,
he might be on the side that we all kind of generally agree is the good guy side, but she's just as misguided and she's just as dangerous as Kylo Ren is.
You know? They're both loose cannons.
And there's plenty of moments in the movie where she's doing, like, little things that I think are designed to make the audience feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I don't like. I'm looking back on it, I'm a little uncomfortable about the fact that the first time they do their little mind link thing, they're like galactic Skype call or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, her first instinct is to, like, try to just fucking murder the guy.
She shoots the blaster.
And, like, later on, there's, like, she's getting there and she's like, I found Skywalker first. I'm beating you. Like, I'm fucking better than you. Like, she starts getting real, like, aggro about the whole thing. And you're like, Rey, this is the dark side talking. Like, you are feeding into this really fucking hard.
Well, I think that's something that, you know, Luke also talked to her about, and I can't remember if that was before or after. Absolutely. That scene he started training
talking
her,
about,
like,
the dark place on the island.
She immediately went towards the dark side because it had the answer she was looking for,
because her coming to the island to begin with, like, this wasn't really about you know, her just coming to deliver a message to Luke Skywalker. She came because she desired power, and we know how that always turns out in Star Wars.
Yeah,
like that is a really interesting thing for him to be like, at a certain point to be like, you just showing up here already kind of invalidates you from receiving this training you want. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was really fucking into everything this movie had to say about the Force and Rey and Luke and Kylo. Like, it just worked.
And Arxidus in chat says, for all the work they've done to build and then dash expectations about cyclical storytelling, do not worry that they could just slip back into it again anyway.
No, for sure.
And absolutely.
The fact that we're going back to J.J. Abrams, I think, is a mistake.
Yeah, but then again, think about it. You remember who it was going to be before they switched back to J.J. Abrams, right?
It was the guy who did Jurassic World.
Yes. Yeah. Which,
I mean, honestly... Nick, you're a fan of Jurassic World.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't like that movie, but I think
I don't know how much of it was his fault, though.
Exactly, I think, and I've been pretty clear about my criticisms of that movie. Most of it is very much from a day one conceptual, why does this movie exist standpoint.
Yeah,
not as much from like a, okay, we've got a script and we're shooting, what are the decisions that the director's making on set kind of standpoint.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that guy could have done with a Star Wars movie. I don't, why was he pulled? I don't remember.
Well, I don't know if they have expressly said why he was pulled, but also I think maybe part of it is, and like you said, there is a sort of whiplash going from Force Awakens to The Last Jedi, and maybe internally they recognize that, and that like they don't, by the time it's all said and done, I don't think anybody wants these three films to feel disconnected or
well, I think history is going to be a little more generous on that point of view, because look at the original trilogy. Those three films are very different from one another.
Yeah.
And I bet 1980, you know, you've seen Star Wars and now you've seen Empire Strikes Back and you know they're doing this Revenge of the Jedi movie. Like that series must have looked completely different when it was just two movies. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like we don't know what kind of context the third movie is going to set the whole thing in, and I think that might soften some. Like going back and watching The Force Awakens, even thinking about what I know from The Last Jedi, kind of colors some scenes differently, and it makes them kind of interesting in ways that, you know, I think might come very naturally to future audiences that maybe not. You know, we can't see now because we're not looking at the whole picture. Kind of.
Yeah. So one thing that's kind of weird, and I can't say this for sure, but it certainly seems this way, the way they're actually making these movies, these three new movies, it seems very much like they wrote the first movie, they wrote Force Awakens, and then handed the baton to Rian Johnson to write this one. I'm wondering how much of the overarching plot they actually know,
or dude, like, I bet nothing.
So,
I bet, yeah, probably. J.J. Abrams specifically, like I think picking J.J. Abrams to do the first movie in this trilogy was a fantastic idea. I think picking him to do the third movie in this trilogy is an equally terrible idea. The guy is really good at setting up interesting hooks. Like he can throw hooks out all fucking day, and they're usually pretty on point. They're usually pretty interesting. He can set up this weird mystery box thing all he wants. And he did that with The Force Awakens, with things like Rey's parentage, you know, who is this Grandmaster Supreme Leader Snoke guy, you know, all that shit.
Yeah.
He can set that up, but the guy cannot execute. Yeah. He can't finish any of them. Dude, Lost. I fucking love Lost. I watched every season, every goddamn episode of that show. But that,
I do love that show.
That is a thesis study in how good J.J. Abrams is at building intrigue and how terrible he is at satisfying from that intrigue.
The problem is, I agree, he doesn't know where to go. And so instead of answering questions, he just says, well, what about this? There's another question now. And yeah, he's really good at the suspense, but then there's no like satisfaction.
He sets up these hooks in The Force Awakens that like some people were disappointed that The Last Jedi resolves them in such an anticlimactic way, because you know they thought that was the story that they're here to tell, you know.
I think
Rian Johnson's decision to just be like, nope, Snoke doesn't fucking matter, Rey's parents don't fucking matter, like I think that is an equally valid, maybe not as cockles of your heart warm fuzzy satisfying as like, oh no, Rey is special, but like there's an equally satisfying and probably even more complex, interesting story to tell by throwing those questions away.
Yeah, but think of it this way. J.J. Abrams set up all these mystery boxes like he put them in the first movie. Rian Johnson then threw them all out. And like I said, like at the end of this movie, it very much feels kind of like there's a like the slate is clean. So it's almost mm-hmm. like by coming to do the third movie, he kind of has to do all of that over again. It's almost like he has to kind of set them up, but then he has to, answer them in that same movie. So
I agree that they might have to like set up some other kind of vestigial arcs, but I think it's very. I feel like coming off The Last Jedi, it's very clear that like this is very much Rey and Kylo's story. And this is going to be about how their relation, like how their relationship evolves and what they decide to do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I also think, I think since Rian Johnson wrote The Last Jedi, I think I would be surprised if he is also not involved with the writing of episode 9. Because he set up all, like, he changed the game with The Last Jedi, and it's very like everything that happens after this point has to address what Rian Johnson set up in this movie.
I do want to clarify. I'm sorry. Like I do want to clarify real quick. I know it's a little particular, but I'm not saying that like Rian Johnson just threw away those hooks. Was just like swept them off the table. I think he answered them in a way that was kind of like casting the importance of the question in doubt to begin with.
Yes.
And I think that was from a filmmaking perspective, I think that was a perfectly valid answer.
Yes.
To those questions.
Also, this is something I've seen come up a few times, and I was actually wondering myself when I saw it. So we had that moment where Kylo Ren tells Rey that your parents were nothing. They're nobody.
He doesn't tell her. He makes her admit that she already knew.
Oh, yeah. True.
Room there, I guess, if you want to go back that route.
But like, there's also like, it's you have to.
Think they should.
The audience has to question like, do we trust that? Like, think of who's telling her this. Like, that could be manipulation. That could be just manipulating, telling her what he thinks she needs to hear to achieve his goals.
But I think that also kind of goes back to what we talked about earlier, in that the fact that her parents are nobodies is kind of a big deal. I mean, the Force does not have to be through the Skywalker lineage. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Anybody can be a Force user. It's not, it doesn't matter where you came from. It just matters what you can do and what you believe.
Sure. And I agree with all that. It's when you think about it, everyone involved with making this movie, including Disney, since Disney, acquired Star Wars, has been, they've referred to this line of movies that started with episode 4 and all the way through episode 9. They refer to this whole saga as the Skywalker saga, which makes me think that the fact that we're going into the final chapter of this saga with Luke dead and
spoilers,
Luke dead and Rey apparently not a Skywalker like a lot of people were expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And Carrie Fisher passed away. So
I was going to say, ironically, the only person not dead at the end of this movie from the original trilogy is the only one dead in real life.
That's true.
I think again, that's kind of why this whole thing is not just about Rey. It's about Rey in relation to Kylo, because Kylo is a Skywalker.
That's true. That is true. You often forget that Kylo is a Skywalker. And honestly, I think it would be a smart move if ultimately this ends up being not necessarily a Skywalker story in terms of like she's a Skywalker, but more of this is the Skywalker legacy. Like this is what Luke believed. This is what he passed down. This is the memory he is leaving. This is his
how
legacy.
The Skywalker clan influenced the galaxy.
Exactly. So, and I think there's still a lot of wiggle room there. But, this is, as of right now, this is all kind of hearsay. Like, who knows when we're even going to start finding out tidbits about episode 9.
I mean, no time soon.
It wouldn't be too long, because episode 9 does come out in 2 years. So that you would imagine they've got to start filming fairly soon.
What's the Star Wars movie we're getting next year?
The Han Solo movie.
Han Solo?
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
I'm excited about that.
So, quick question. aside, how'd you like the boobies in this movie?
The boobies.
Boobies. You mean the blue milk
boobies? When Luke goes up to that creature with the four boobs and squeezes blue milk out of it.
It's a little weird, right?
Right?
Yeah. It made me a little uncomfortable.
I didn't think that was a necessary scene.
Well, I don't know. Who cares?
It's funny that they put an ode back to, you know, episode four with them drinking blue milk.
Yeah. I think it was cool that, like, they were showing him having this really, like,
mundane routine.
Weird. Uh-huh. Yeah, but, like, kind of weird, mundane daily life. Like, he was fishing, but he was doing it in a really kind of, like, badass Jedi kind of way.
Oh, he's a Jedi. And which, like, honestly led to what I think is a good joke. When Rey's like, hey, train me. I've seen what your daily routine is. You don't got a lot going on. Like, I thought that was a good joke. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk, I guess I have a gripe.
Yeah.
This is probably my biggest gripe with the movie is that a lot of what happened in the second act of the movie were Finn and Rose's little adventure.
Where they go to Canto Bite.
Yeah, while visually cool, and it's just kind of narratively inconsistent and and unnecessary in some ways, even.
I wasn't a fan.
Oh, man. Hang on. Wait. Okay. Just wait. I could be crazy. I'm probably crazy. I might listen to this podcast 5 years from now and be like, what the fuck was I thinking? But I feel like maybe that was the point, that it was supposed to be this weird, like, the whole mission was a bust. Like, the whole mission was a waste of time. And not only was it a waste of time, it also ended up subverting a real, practical, not stupid, let's run off to a casino and play spy plan that would have fucking worked if they had not fucked with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I feel like most of the decisions that Poe and that Finn were making in this movie were very much framed and supposed to be taken like, what the fuck are you doing?
No, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Like,
for me, Crispy, I think I'm kind of going towards where Nick's saying. I understand the point of it. I just don't like how it was executed. I understand the point of them going to this planet of, you know, warmongers, essentially what they all were. But did they also have to be warmongers who, like, abuse children and animals? Like, I thought some of that wasn't, like, honestly, I thought it, because honestly, that was one of the biggest problems with me, was the whole escape scene on the fucking giant giraffe dog things, whatever those were. I wish they would have gotten rid of that. I understand them going to this planet for this bust of a mission, but I wish they would have gone to the casino, saw the guy, got caught, thrown in jail, Benicio del Toro rescues them, chase scene, they get off the planet.
Is that what happened?
I'm saying get rid of the whole animal shit. Like, them escaping through the sewers on animals and stuff. Like, I thought that, and once again, that might be because it was like, oh, let's have something for the kids, and we can sell.
Yes, I don't know really how that changes. I don't know. Like, I do think them going to that planet and having that scene made a bit of thematic sense. I think there was a specific piece of information he was trying to get across to us with that whole thing, and it was definitely the whole point that, like, I mean, this is the real galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your little Star Wars between, if I may, between the First Order and the Resistance is just this stupid little proxy war that we all get rich off of.
Correct.
You know? That's why nobody wants to come help you guys at the end of the movie when you're broadcasting to the whole fucking galaxy, hey, we're about to die. Like, no one wants to help you. Because this isn't a real conflict to anybody. Like this, I think it was important to kind of undercut that and just show that that whole theme of the wheel doesn't just apply to the Jedi, but also applies to the very real practical war that's going on in the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe
it was just kind of a long-winded way to get there.
Maybe you didn't need space horses. I don't know if that would have helped or if that hurt or anything. But Crispy, I'm just saying
they prolonged that scene. I thought it could have been shorter and you would have gotten the point across.
It was just a little long-winded. And ultimately, the movie is 2 hours and 30-plus minutes. Like, I think a lot of that runtime comes from that.
By the time you get to the end of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And not to say I didn't, like, there weren't things about that sequence that I enjoyed. You know, a lot of people have been really positive about the introduction of Rose as a character. Honestly, I found her to be kind of not inconsequential. she didn't leave as big of an impact on me as I was expecting, hearing all, like, a lot of people had, like, really positive things about Rose, to say about Rose, like, she, like, she was a very, big personality, but, like, I just didn't really feel that way at the end of it.
I liked to an extent her, because I like the whole, and I know they kind of did it in the first movie, so it kind of feels a little less important, but like when in the first movie, when Rey and Finn met Han Solo, they're like, oh my God, amazing Han Solo. I kind of liked to an extent that when Rey met Finn, where she caught him,
she
trying
had
to escape,
that same gushing
she
reaction.
Was like, oh my God, you're like, you're the Finn from Legend. And when he's like, oh, and may the force be with you. And she's like, oh, like, I like that kind of starstruck thing. And then she kind of,
Oh no, I'm agreeing with you. I think their whole dynamic was supposed to be that she's just this like gushing fangirl who's like basically daring him along, and he's so, just like Luke Skywalker, just like Rey, just like everybody else, he's so fucking caught up in this idea that he's a goddamn hero,
which
that
is
letting her make. Like, she's letting her pressure him into making really fucking stupid decisions.
Like the end when he tries to go suicidal on that fucking...
Yes!
On the thing, and then she saves him, which I thought was a cool scene.
Everybody in this movie, every hero in this movie is so fucking shoved up their own ass about them being heroes.
So I think actually that was a good scene, because you see that Poe has learned, and he's learned his lesson. He thinks back, you know, Leia was right. You can't always be the hero and sacrifice yourself. And he's trying to teach Finn that. He's like, dude, you're going to die and it's going to be pointless. Don't do it. And then Rose has to come in and save him. I like that. But there was also one more thing I just remembered, Nick, because you were talking about Rose and stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a comedic line that I thought was good in the movie. And I was literally the only one. I chuckled a bit and no one else had made a sound. But because, you know, when Rose first catches Finn, she's like, oh, you were trying to escape. Blah blah blah. Later on, when they're on the whatever, you know, Crate. Snoke ship, and he's all like, "Oh yeah, the escape pods are down this way," and she's like, "Oh, you wouldn't know where they are."
Yeah,
like I thought that was fucking hilarious.
Exactly where they are.
Yeah, and like no one else in the theater made a peep. It was like because in the movie, there's almost like a pause of silence afterwards for the chuckle here, and I was like,
I think they had set a certain expectation for the comedy being more obvious, and that wasn't as obvious, so a lot of people, it may have gone over a lot of people's heads.
I'm worried that like there's going to be a huge blanket conversation about how this movie had too much comedy to the point where we're going to overlook like how good some of it was.
That's what I was saying earlier. Like, I think there's a huge chunk of it that is amazing, but
the visual bit with the fucking iron.
Oh, dude, that was fucking fantastic.
It was so good. It was such a good fake out. You just like did not expect that you were going to see a fucking laundromat on a Star Destroyer. like it was so good, and I love it, and I think things like that are going to get lost to people being like, this movie is too funny.
I forgot, like Robin looked at me over there and she's like, is that an iron?
Yeah, Bernadette did this.
Yeah.
So good.
That was really good.
It looks like a fucking spaceship. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just like, fuck
that,
you.
That might have been one of the best bits of the movie, now that I think about it, just because it was so unexpected.
I mean, hey, I'm a fan of BB-8 running around with a trash can on his head.
Yeah.
I like that.
Dude, I like how he was like intentionally.
Nobody on that Star Destroyer knows what trash cans look like.
I like how he, like, when BB-8 was in the little trash can thing, he kept like intentionally running into stormtroopers as he was going down the hall.
Oh, yeah.
You can't see where he's going.
Speaking of, another thing from the very beginning of the movie, when BB-8's having to plug the leaking holes essentially on the X-Wing, I thought that was fun. And then he can't do it, so he just rams his fucking head into it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That probably should have been the first, like, bit of levity in the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, what are you going to do? I don't care. I don't fucking care what anybody says, but Poe leaving Hux on hold was...
It was good.
I loved it.
I liked it, too.
I just like seeing Imperial characters made to look fucking ridiculous at like how zealous they are.
Oh
yeah. We will destroy. Hello, can you hear me? Hello. We will destroy you.
And he's like, and then he goes through the whole bit where he's like threatening Poe, and then Poe's just like, okay, I'll hold. That was so good.
I don't care what any of you fucking say.
So, hey, I'm not even arguing with you, bro.
I need to see this movie again.
Well, it's like, funny because Crispy and I were talking about it. I kind of wanted to let it sit for a few days and then go see it again. I was thinking about maybe going to see it again like next weekend or something. So if y'all are down. But
try to go see it at Mueller.
Yeah, no doubt. One last thing I wanted to, because we are coming up on an hour here in the podcast. It's kind of where I kind of want to keep these things about an hour. Right. But so Luke's last stand. Mm-hmm. Against Kylo Ren,
I fucking loved it.
Was fucking amazing.
It was fantastic.
It was ultimately not what I was expecting. There's part of me that is kind of sad that we didn't get that epic lightsaber battle between Luke and Kylo Ren, but him just walking out, and also like the low key, like he walks out. And he looks a little bit different. Like he looks clean, a little more clean shaven. His hair's cut. Mm-hmm. He looks more like a hero.
His outfit's actually kind
of
cool.
Expected him to be.
Yeah.
Like after Return of the Jedi.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I thought that was a really nice touch. And Crispy had pointed something out to me earlier that I totally didn't notice, by the footprints.
Yeah, like how like when
there weren't any red footprints behind him.
That like he's not there is that he doesn't leave footprints.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I think is
I think Crait, like there was a lot of visual imagery going on in Crait. There's a lot of like subtext to a lot of that, like the salt and the blood red like mineral underneath, like very, very cool. And I think using that to have like with the imagery of Luke Skywalker walking out and like him leaving no footprints, like bloody footprints essentially is what they look like behind him. Was a really nice touch. Was really fucking cool. I hate that scene though. Like I had such a hard time at first because I've been very adamant about like I didn't want to have a pedantic view of this movie. You know, I didn't want to hear like all the criticisms about like, oh, well, bombs in space wouldn't just fall like that, or like, oh, well, why like hyperdrives don't work like that, or why don't, you know, like I don't give a shit about that stuff really.
Yeah.
Like in the context of the story. But that scene, I was having such a hard time concentrating because he was using the wrong lightsaber, and I didn't know why.
Yeah.
You know, like,
and then
I hated that I fell to the dark side in that moment.
And then,
what do you mean that he was using like his old lightsaber instead of
the one that Rey and Finn had, that Rey and Kylo had just destroyed?
Yeah. And then it hits you, and then it all makes sense. But the fucking crazy Matrix move that he did.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that was
like does the spin around and that scene was really good. I kind of felt something was up. I didn't notice the footprints, I'll say that, but like the fact that he wasn't like interacting with him, I thought was kind of weird.
But like they set you up to fool you because they made you think he was interacting with Leia before when he has the reunion with Leia, and then he like. It looks like they're touching hands, and it kind of like I was like, so he is like they did that to kind of establish that he was really there, and then later on they showed the cut after left and the dice disappeared out of her hand, right?
Yeah. I thought it was the same thing that like, but like Rey and Kylo touched hands when they weren't, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I the first thing that I said to Bernadette when Luke showed up was, how the fuck did he get there?
Yeah.
Because like I knew he had that fucking X-wing that was underwater, and like I doubt that works. It's probably been there for 10 years at least, and so that's why I thought it was kind of weird.
Yeah,
and I was trying to figure that out, and then when I found out it was a projection using the Force, I was like, that's fucking awesome.
There was a lot of details there where it's like, well, how the fuck did he get here? Like, how did he get it? Like, I really thought like. I was watching the scene going like, okay, I don't really care, but I know that this is like going to get fucking ripped apart for this
shit. Yeah.
But then the reveal is that like, no, he's actually just using the fucking Force. Like, thumbs up.
I did also like the fact that he knew exactly what he was doing. He knew that Kylo was going to be a fucking ass, and he knew he could buy time. And the fact that
he could goad him into... Yeah,
the fact that it was like Kylo was like, fire everything.
Oh my god,
don't stop!
Like, part of me, especially after seeing how Kylo Ren interacts with Rey during that scene in Snoke's chambers, like you kind of had this like, there's a part of Kylo Ren that makes you think, oh, part of this guy is like honorable, like this guy could, this guy has an honorable side to him. And then when Luke comes out and he's up there in the in the AT-AT or whatever, and he says,
"I thought he was in like an A-wing."
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but he's up there in the, with the line.
He was in the command shuttle,
and he basically just says, "Shoot every gun we have at that guy." I was like, "Damn, never
what
mind."
A dick.
What a dick.
Nope. Yeah.
And it's so funny because like I forgot for a split second about all the red minerals. So like when that first laser blast like hits Luke, I thought he just like for a second I was like, "Oh my god, he just exploded into like a bloody mist."
Misted.
Yeah.
But that scene was so fucking epic.
That was good.
And I think hopefully I think time will look back on that as a really epic scene and maybe even be kind of iconic. Like that was just that was so cool.
That was dope.
Mm-hmm. And I did like that was kind of, I don't want to say the end of Luke Skywalker, but I mean, it kind of was, but it's one of those things where it's like, you know, Jedi know that when they die, they're still around kind of.
Yeah.
And
they
so I like
one
that
with
he,
the Force.
Yeah. They become, you know, their physical body is gone and they're all just, you know, the Force. But I like that I'm sure projecting yourself across the galaxy is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
They say we'll kill you.
Yeah.
In the
Yeah.
Kylo Ren says that.
Oh, really?
Wait, yeah, the first time they connect, he's like, "You're not doing this. This would kill you if you tried to do this."
Oh, yeah. I didn't catch that. That's good.
Yeah, I do remember that now.
And then when Luke does it at the end, it kills him.
Yeah, I really liked that, though. That's kind of how he went out. He knew he didn't. And I like that, you know, Rey had this help Luke have this transformation with the Force, his relationship with the Force, that he was done with it. He thought it was dumb. You know, Rey kind of I don't want to say puts him in his place, but kind of realizes that. And then he goes to destroy the fucking Jedi temple, the tree with the knowledge in it. And then like, Yoda just does it. And he's like, "Dude, what the fuck does it matter? They're books. You know, what does Rey know? What would those books teach her?"
Right.
That know?
But what about the end of the movie?
Yeah. Hold on. I'll get there in a second.
Wait, real quick. We haven't really mentioned Yoda.
Well, let me finish this thought real quick, and then we'll talk about Yoda.
Yeah.
That Luke, you know, realizes, you know, hey, maybe I do need to be a part of this. It is, you know, a bigger deal. You know, does everything to help them escape, and kind of like puts that last, almost like when it's almost kind of, you know, like poetry. The same way Obi-Wan died to Darth Vader, he just let himself die. He knew that it didn't matter that he wasn't there anymore.
Yeah.
And I really like that was Luke's last like moment. That was his last.
I just really hope that Mark Hamill is still back for episode 9 and that this is not.
Oh, I'm 100% sure he's going to show up as a Force ghost in episode 9.
I think he still has a really important role to play. And I think it'd be a shame to like just let that be the end of it.
So Yoda.
Pretty good ending.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it. There's not a whole lot I want to say about Yoda. I think I was really kind of surprised by his appearance there. I love that the ghost, the Force ghost, was like straight up like the puppet from The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Like
Frank Oz.
Oh my god, it was perfect. Like it was not egregious. It was like it served a really important purpose in the movie, and man, it gave me all the feels.
And
I loved it.
I like that. You know, because Force ghosts are not something we've seen too much of.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that they're still mysterious. I like that they don't just show up all day, every day. Like that they're not. They show up when they're needed, when it's
really
important.
Yeah.
And like Yoda shows up and Luke's not like, "Oh my God, it's Yoda." He's just like, "Oh, Master Yoda."
Yeah.
Like it just kind of like it's a thing. He knows it's a habit. And they have that. They literally like sit down and have the conversation. And Yoda's like knocking him on the fucking head with a stick.
Dude,
like
was,
an Empire.
It was like literally like they were. It was like that dynamic between Luke and Yoda. Even though it's been years and years and years since that happened, like, oh my god, it was so cool. I love seeing that.
Nothing but respect for my Yoda.
Yeah.
And so I guess that kind of makes I like, similar to Force Awakens, there was not so much nostalgia thrown at you that it felt like it wasn't, you know, there was a little bit, you know, definitely the John Williams score, you know, would kind of crescendo every once in a while and you get your heartstrings get tugged at.
Yeah.
But I like that there wasn't so much, you know, the whole like, oh, the chess game at the exact same moment they left off on the Millennium Falcon. There wasn't so much that it felt out of place.
I really feel like the only bit of actual fan service that wasn't like something meant to be some subversive message was when Luke was dying and he's like sitting there on the cliff watching the binary suns. Like,
oh yeah.
That was the moment that it was like, oh my God, full circle. Here we are.
Yep. Like him on Tatooine looking off at the suns.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I want to watch the movie again.
No, I agree. I 100% within the next like week, I want to see it.
But here's the thing, man. That scene with Yoda was fucking awesome.
Yes.
And I had a lot of things spoiled for me before I actually got to see
that. Oh, that sucks.
I don't think it does. Because I think it kind of softened my reception of some things.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to sit there and be like, what? You know, I could kind of just take it more as part of the story. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I don't know. But I'm really glad that scene was not spoiled for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what does it mean that we had that scene where Yoda's like, man, that shit doesn't matter. Like, you need to fucking let go. And then he calls a bolt of lightning out of the sky to fucking smite it. And then we find out at the end of the movie that, like, he didn't destroy the books, you know?
Well, we didn't know that Rey had taken them, yeah.
Rey took them, right, but Yoda surely did.
Yeah.
So maybe. Was he lying to Luke? Or was he just telling Luke what Luke needed to hear?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. Was there any truth
to what Yoda was actually saying? Or like,
I think it's the latter.
Or do you think it was like, I mean, he was kind of like, yeah, there's stuff that can be used in those books, but it's not going to give her anything that she doesn't already have. So like, she's going to use, like, are we supposed to take this as meaning that like, she's going to go against Luke's wishes and recreate the Jedi?
Like, I don't think so.
Dogmatically of how they were, or is she actually going to use them as a guide to like create some new way? Mm-hmm. You know,
I think it's a situation where we talked about the fact that she never had a master. She doesn't have one. She doesn't have someone to lean back on.
Right.
And so those books might just be like a quick start guide to the Force. You know what I'm saying? Like she's just going to be able to use those to get some information. Oh, let me, you know, maybe, you know, one of them is written by Master Yoda. And he talks about the fact that, you know, when on Dagobah, when Luke's trying to lift the X-Wing, and he's like, it's too heavy, I can't do it. And it's like, that's not what it's about. Like, weight is irrelevant. That doesn't matter when it comes to the Force. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. I'm hoping that that's kind of what she'll get out of those books, is maybe there's some information like that, and just her able to, you know, become more attuned with her Force.
It's really interesting to think that, like, whatever we get in terms of Jedi going forward is going to be whatever Rey decides
is important.
It should be, yeah. You know, like whatever her and we saw like her understanding of what Jedi were is incredibly flawed.
You know what? Incomplete.
And whatever she decides is the way going forward is going to be what it is. So it adds this like extreme sense of stakes to her development as a character. Like, she needs to become a person that can make something that will be, you know, a force of good in the galaxy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, I think it'd be really interesting to explore in episode 9, like what if we somehow end up in a situation where Rey does decide to let Kylo teach her some things about the Force? What if at the same time she's speaking with Luke's Force ghost, like, and he's giving her, like, what if it's kind of like a dichotomy of, like, here's what Kylo Ren is trying to teach her, and here's what Luke is trying to teach her, and she's having to, like, grapple with these two conflicting methodologies. Like, who knows what could happen?
I think that would be amazing if they got to a place where it was like, okay, we are rebuilding, like, we're building from scratch, and the only, like, you see it a lot in, like martial arts and, like, a lot of, like, you know, in anime and a lot of other like Asian stories, where like these relationships of like these two rivals who, like, their rivalry is what builds this like school, is what builds this dojo, is what builds this new philosophy, you know, and how they struggle and like how they are two different people, how they complement, how they conflict. And like that these two people might be locked in a position where they have to decide, like, what, you know, what, like they have to reconcile somehow what this new way is going to be. And it will be defined by their rivalry, you know? Yeah. Like fucking love that.
I think that's exciting.
Yeah.
Real quick. I keep forgetting. There's things I keep remembering I wanted to bring up and I didn't, and we're running out of time, but, cool. Just real quick, the the revelation about when Kylo Ren's talking to Rey in one of those fantastic dialogue scenes between where they're on the, as you put it, the galactic Skype call.
The shirtless one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, oh my God.
I thought they could have done without that. Oh, it was funny. But...
I could feel Robin's eyes roll through the back of her head. From, I like how they acknowledged it too. Ray was like, "You think you could put a shirt on?" Or I forgot what she said in that scene. It was pretty funny. But in that dialogue where they keep reiterating the story, like, "Did Luke tell you what happened?" And then eventually he tells her that I fell to the dark side because Luke tried to kill me in my sleep because he thought I was evil or whatever. Sounded better than that, right? And then, like, we have this revelation again where she confronts Luke about it. And then Luke says, I had this one human moment of weakness. And I let fear creep in. And it just, even though it was only a split second.
Yeah.
Like, he had the thought. He turned on
let it in. And that was all it needed to destroy.
He turned on his lightsaber and then changed his mind. But it was too late.
I don't even think he turned on his lightsaber, did he?
Yeah, he turned on his lightsaber, and then Kylo woke up and turned around, but he had already made the decision to. He realized
that was the thing, yeah.
And then it happened.
I could be 100% wrong, but I think if you go back in Kylo's telling, Luke had his lightsaber on, but in Luke's telling, he didn't.
In Luke's first telling, he's not holding a lightsaber at all. He just has the hut pulled down on him. Then you hear Kylo's side of the story, which is him waking up to see Luke like about to murder him. Mm-hmm. And then you have Luke actually explaining what went on, and he does activate the lightsaber. And then
I was filled with
regret and consequence. And
okay, that's right.
And like they do the snaps or like the tilt shift. Yeah.
But I thought that like escalation of the story and hearing it from both perspectives. Like and seeing from both perspectives how it was totally understandable how each person reacted, like seeing that even though Luke is a Jedi Master, like he knows what's at stake and he is still human. Like he had a moment of weakness, which everybody has, but like that's what they always talk.
He wasn't the infallible legend that he thought he was.
Yeah, and it was also like the first time I look back on like lines from the prequel trilogy and gives me shivers, like where they talk about fear leads to anger. Like that line literally played in my head. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. All that stuff, right? And then I was like, he had a moment of fear, and he reacted with that fear, and like the consequences were like astronomical.
Catastrophic.
And I think that was beautiful. And then to see Kylo Ren's half of the story where he's like, yeah, I woke up. He was about to murder me. What did you expect me to do? Yeah. And like it's totally understandable from that side too. So it's kind of like there wasn't really a right or a wrong side. They both just reacted to what they thought was in front of them, and then it kind of snowballed from there. I think that was really cool.
Agreed.
But unless there's anything else we want to add, I think this might be a good time to finish.
No,
this.
I think it's good. I think we covered a lot of it. I'm sure I forgot something.
Yeah.
Somebody's gonna be upset that we didn't talk about Space Leia.
Oh yeah,
that was interesting.
Yeah,
that was so. Just to briefly touch on it, I always kind of wondered if Leia would become more attuned with the Force because she never really used it, and maybe she never had since. Maybe this was the first time she ever actually did.
Well, at the end of Return of the Jedi, she's like awakening into the Force.
Correct. Yeah, so, but that's what I'm saying. Just
so
she
has some kind of connection. We know that like this whole Skywalker clan thing is very attuned to it. And like, I think a lot of the extended universe has very often played with the idea of Leia being force sensitive in some way. Like she like trained for a while too, I think, in the original extended universe.
Yeah, she did.
So I don't think it was that egregious to be like, yeah, she's got some kind of strong connection to the Force. How you go about demonstrating that using that specific scene, that specific sequence of events. I mean, I get why people were just like, what the fuck is going on?
No, like, I was telling this to Crispy earlier. Like when I saw her ship explode for the first time, and I remember hearing like reading interviews with like Bob Iger and stuff and then talking at Disney about like how they were going to address her story after Carrie Fisher passed away. And I thought like, I was like, really? You just blew her up? That was your answer? Like, I was about to be, like, kind of pissed. But then
no, I agree with you.
But then she came back, and I was like, "That was also kind of weird, the way you did it. I almost would have preferred you just left her."
I do want to say that I wouldn't have, because that kind of added to Kylo's story, in that, you know, that was when him and his squadron were attacking.
Yeah.
And he didn't pull the trigger, but he had already been told to come back, and he didn't.
Yeah.
Right. That was so. If he would have gone, like, I kind of wanted her to die there for just his story.
Yeah.
Because it's like, hey. He was being, yeah. you know, a dick and not listening to orders. And he's like, no, I'm going to kill him, blah, blah, blah. Really, but then when it came to the moment, he couldn't pull the trigger, but his like squad could, because they didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It would have been kind of weird if they would have done that. And I'm still not 100% on my feelings on her being in space for a little while and using the Force to pull herself back in. Like I said, I don't exactly know how the Force works. It's kind of magical. Maybe she could have. Yeah, like maybe she's never been super Force sensitive, but in that moment of almost dying, her kind of Force powers, almost like a motherly's love when a child's trapped under a car.
It's like she went Super Saiyan for a moment, okay?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I don't hate it.
No, yeah,
I don't love it, but I don't hate it.
I don't hate it either. It is definitely like,
I think it's the weirdest scene in the movie. Like
it's weird.
Yeah,
but I do think there was, you know, again, I said this earlier. I don't like playing the let's rewrite the movie game, but there would have been some interesting consequences if she had actually died there.
Yeah,
if that was like more directly related to the actions that Poe had taken, and then like he has to live with like, oh my god, I got Princess Leia killed.
Yeah.
You know? And then that adds more tension to his conflict with Laura Dern later on, where it's like, you are not fucking Princess Leia. Like, you are not the person that I take orders from. I don't know. It would.
I don't know. I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
But I guess. So. Ed,
but that's all I got.
Yeah, Ed popped into chat a little bit late, and he just wanted to, you know, us to like kind of summarize how we feel about the movie. He said he has mixed feelings on it, and I think that's a good way to probably cap this podcast off. But I
would not characterize my feelings as mixed at all. Yeah. I fucking love this movie.
I think I can kind of say I'm mixed. I'm leaning towards positive. Like, don't get me wrong. Like I said, I want to see this again. I'm leaning towards positive. I still am not 100% on a few things, but. Overall, I really enjoyed it. I liked it.
I think ultimately, I like the movie a lot, and I don't yet know where it ranks in relation to the other movies in the franchise. I think I'll have to watch it another two or three times before I kind of make that decision. I do think it's a worthy follow up to The Force Awakens, and I think it certainly sets up some really interesting ideas and concepts Episode 9. And at the same time. Clears the slate for episode 9. So I also have no idea.
I wish I was on this with you guys.
Sorry, Ed.
As I have some very negative opinions about this movie.
Oh, well, it's too late. We've been going for like an hour.
Too late.
Where are we going?
We can talk about it.
The point is, you're probably wrong, but it's okay.
Yeah.
But anyways, it is a divisive movie. That's one thing to be said for sure. It is definitely divisive among the audience. But anyways, I think we need to wrap it up. We're going on like, I don't know,
well over an
hour here. So again, thank you everybody who tuned in, all of our supporters on Patreon for tuning in. We really appreciate it. If you are interested in supporting us and joining us for future recordings of these bonus podcasts, patreon.com/4players where you can find it. And I think that's it. Thank you guys for listening. Crispy, Nolan, thank you for being here. I'm sure we're probably gonna go be seeing this movie again here soon. Anyways, that's it. Thank you guys. 4playernetwork.com is the website. We usually talk about video games, but hey, movies are great too. So good night.
Later.